Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. It will get better.
It's gotta get
better. It will get better.
It's gonna be
better. It will get better.
Cause
God is in
control, y'all. Hey. Thank you, Lord. Hey.
Find the praise
within your heart.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here with you again.
on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Since Thanksgiving is coming, we start with a psalm, of course. And since Thanksgiving is coming, I picked this particular one. I hope that you'll join me in at least the listening or the reading. And I picked Psalm 138, a psalm of David. God answered my prayer. I will praise you with my whole heart. Before the gods, I will sing praises to you. I will worship toward your holy temple and praise your name. For your loving kindness and your truth, for you have magnified your word above all your name. In the day that I cried out, you answered me and made me bold with strength in my soul. All the kings of the earth shall praise you, O Lord, when they hear the words of your mouth. Yes, they shall sing of the ways of the Lord, for great is the glory of the Lord. Though the Lord is on high, yet he regards the lowly, but the proud he knows from afar. Though I walk in the midst of trouble, you will revive me. You will stretch out your hand against the wrath of my enemies, and your right hand will save me. The Lord will perfect that which concerns me. Your mercy, O Lord, endures forever. Do not forsake the works of your hand. And I know the Lord will add a blessing to the reading of his beautiful and wonderful word, and each one of us, I'm sure, can identify with that. And so it is. Well, everyone, today we are going to be ending our study of the book of Micah. And we will be dealing with the last two chapters, chapters 6 and 7, that are very, very interesting and will be addressed more to us personally than as a literal text. And just before we get into our text, chapters 6 and 7 of Micah for today, I just want to do a brief review of Micah. Micah exposes the... Okay. Micah exposes the injustice of Judah and the righteousness and justice of Jehovah. One-third of the book indicts Israel and Judah for specific sins, including oppression, bribery among judges, prophets, and priests, exploitation of the powerless, covetousness, cheating, violence, and pride. There's no difference, obviously, between them and us, because I know that without even thinking about it, we could certainly furnish evidence of that in our society today. So that's one third of Judah, of Micah. Another third of Micah predicts the judgment that will come as a result of these sins. The remaining third of the book is a message of hope and consolation. God's justice will triumph and the divine deliverer will come. True peace and justice will prevail only when the Messiah reigns. The goodness and severity of God is told to us, and they're illustrated in Micah's presentation of divine judgment and pardon. The book emphasizes the integral relationship between true spirituality and social ethics. Micah 6:8 summarizes what God wants to see in his people: justice and equity tempered with mercy and compassion as the result of a humble and obedient relationship with him. And this verse is a verse that we see and we have heard many, many times. I think we really, today perhaps we will really give some serious attention to it personally. Micah 6:8. God, has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? And that is Micah 6, verse 8. He goes on to, in his book, in the book of Micah, we go on to chapter 7. And in chapter 7, verse 18, he asks, who is a God like you? Micah is asking, God, who is a God like you, pardoning iniquity and passing over the transgression of the remnant of his heritage? He does not retain his anger forever because he delights in mercy. And that's 7, verse 18. We'll come back to that again. Now, the key chapters in the book of Micah are chapters 6 and 7. The closing section of Micah describes a courtroom scene. God has a controversy against his people, and he calls the mountains and hills together to form the jury as he sets forth his case. The people have replaced heartfelt worship with empty ritual, thinking that this is all God demands. They have divorced God's standard of justice from their daily dealings in order to cover their unscrupulous practice. They have failed to realize what the Lord requires of man. There can only be one verdict: guilty. Nevertheless, the book closes on a note of hope. The same God who executes judgment also delights to extend mercy. Who is a God like you, pardoning iniquity and passing over the transgressions of the remnant of his heritage? He does not retain his anger forever because he delights in mercy. No wonder the prophet exclaims, therefore, I will look to the Lord. I will wait for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me. And so that's kind of a rough survey of Micah. And today we're going to be looking at chapters 6 and 7, the end of Micah. So Micah, the prophet of the downtrodden and exploited people of Judean society, prophesies during a great social, during a time of great social injustice, so much like our society today, we are going to emphasize, however, the last part of of Micah. We know that the beginning of the book, verses chapters 1, 2, and 3, talk about the predictions of judgment. We've been over those. Chapters 4 and 5, the prediction of restoration. And 6 and 7 will tell us about God calling into court the Judeans and the Israelites, and presents an unanswerable case against them, the witnesses being the mountains. The people have spurned God's grace, choosing instead to revel in wickedness. Notice that the words there, the people have spurned God's grace, choosing instead to revel in wickedness. Micah concludes with a sublime series of promises that the Lord will pardon their iniquities and renew their nation in according with his covenant. So he's making a new covenant with them. One of the things that's so interesting here is just that. And I just want to say that the chapter 6, begins this way. Okay, got it. Here, now what the Lord says. Arise, plead your case before the mountains, and let the hills hear your voice. Hear, O you mountains, the Lord's complaints, and you strong foundations of the earth, for the Lord has a complaint against his people, and he will contend with Israel. And so right there, this sets the stage for the kind of analysis and discussion we're going to have today. These first verses establish a metaphysical interpretation of the 6 and 7 especially. And so we're going to be working with the meaning of verses 6 and 7 as it applies to each one of us. Now, Truth Unity, in their website, has a series of questions that we're going to go over most of them and see how this affects us personally in our spiritual development, in our regeneration process, as we grow to be able to achieve the peace, the love, the harmony, the prosperity, the everything that we need to live a beautiful, wonderful, well-appointed life. It starts on the inside. We are aware of that. And so we are going to be working with how this text speaks to our spiritual growth personally. We take this very seriously. All right, in one and two we get the Lord's complaints against his people. Micah pictured a court of law with Israel on trial before the Lord in the presence of unshakable witnesses, the mountains and the hills. As we know that the mountains and hills symbolize the highest of consciousness that we can reach, and very often that is the space that we use in our meditation and our spiritual practice. So this immediately has set itself up in a space of consciousness, spiritual consciousness, spiritual thought. And so we will continue with that in a minute, but let's go back to the text. In 3 to 5, Micah tells us God's complaints. God says to Israel, "What have I done to you? I have redeemed you from the house of bondage." And certainly Israel must remember that God could not be persuaded to curse Israel except if they brought curses on themselves through their own idolatry and disobedience. In the prophet's courtroom, God showed Israel that if they felt cursed in any way, it was entirely their responsibility. This is a very important piece here, because that way, when we see that the law of cause and effect operates, whether you know it or not, it operates independent of God. God has set up the law. And if we choose to act negatively, we will reap negativity. If we choose to act righteously, we will manifest righteousness. And so that's one of the biggest tenets of unity and New Thought Christianity, your thoughts are so very important, because what you think about comes about. And so, therefore, we have to be very careful about our thinking and our thoughts. And he goes on verses 6 to 7. The people are told that this is your responsibility. Look what you have been thinking. Look what you are reaping. And the people say, "Well, what can I do? What do you want from me?" Now, this was asked out of bitterness and resentment, wanting God to change. However, his answer, chapter 6, verse 8, "God has shown you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. To do justly, that is to act in a just, fair way toward others. Treat them as you would want to be treated, simply. What does it mean to love mercy? To show love. Give others the same measure of mercy you want to receive from God. And to walk humbly with your God. True humility is thinking rightly of yourself, not thinking rightly of yourself. When you have found out what you really are, you will be humble, for you are nothing to boast of. To be humble will make you safe. To be humble will make you happy. To be humble will make music in your heart when you go to bed. To be humble will make you wake up knowing that you are in the likeness of God. And so it says that God has shown you in Micah, the prophet's imagined courtroom, God has proved his case before the court. Israel was afflicted, but it was not because of the neglect or disregard of God. Their own sins brought their affliction upon them. Just as for us, our own error thinking has brought whatever afflictions we have upon us. In addition, what God required of them was not mysterious and was not too difficult. They simply did not do it. So in verses 9 through 12, God sees the injustice and tells us of the injustice and deceit of Israel. God was angry with Israel for cheating in their business dealings. They lied, they cheated, they stole from one another, and they were greedy. They were all into making money. They made themselves rich through violence. And God's judgment on the greedy and the violent Israel is talked about in verses 13 to 16. God promised a tragic end for their ill-gotten gains. He would allow them no satisfaction or blessings from what they possessed, so that you shall eat but not be satisfied. You shall do what you do. What you rescue, I will give over to the sword. All the works of Ahab's house are done, and you walk in their counsels instead of walking in the way of the Lord. They walked in the sinful example of wicked kings before them and in the counsels of the ungodly. And so this is in chapter 6, Micah chapter 6, is what is the text, what the text is about. And so now we want to go into the metaphysics of it, and Reverend Mary Lou is going to talk to us about some of the questions that are asked in the Unity website on chapter 6, Micah chapter 6. Reverend Mary Lou, go right ahead.
Oh, thank you, Reverend Ellen. So in Micah chapter 6, chapter 7, Micah's message contains clear and notable signs of hope for the future. Chapters 6 and 7 begins with judgment and then moves to hope. And this alternation between judgment and hope may conform with some pattern in Micah's preaching. Now, the summary of much that the prophet Micah has to say is that what the Lord requires of us is this: to do what is just, to show constant love, and to live in humble fellowship with our God. The Truth Unity website, the metaphysical question in the for chapter 6, begins with question. Now, the old Bible teachers, so loud in their denunciation of evil and of evildoers, this was because under the old grace dispensation, methods of reformation, they were based on fear. They were fear-based, that man was a sinner and must be scared into righteousness, whereas this new thought, new method, has been superseded by the new method of reformation, which teaches and preaches the love of God and the necessity of understanding the law of love. Even in the present century, we see an entire change of perspective on the part of revivalists. They used to preach this fear of God and hellfire as a reformatory measures, but now they preach the love of God and the beauty of holiness. Now, today, we look for the causes of oppression, covetousness, and dishonesty in the understanding that all causes arise in our mind. Now, this forces us to search within ourselves, to look within ourselves and cast evil thoughts out of our own mind. And this is letting go of all error thoughts. And once we have done this, then we are ready to help others to make a like overcoming and letting go of these error thoughts. Now, in today's lesson, in chapter 6, the prophet Micah says that the best time for us to perform the spiritual practice of letting go of our error thoughts is in the morning. Now, this is when it is light, because it is in our conscious power to do so. Modern metaphysicians even find that early morning is the best time for disciplining our thoughts and letting go of error thoughts. Now, as we've said a few times now, what does Jehovah require of us? What the Lord requires of us is this: to do what is just, to show constant love, and to live in humble fellowship with our God. He hath showed thee, O man, what is good, and what does Jehovah require? And then in Truth Unity, in the metaphysical aspects, it goes on, it says, an enlightened age is an age in which the principles of truth are given practical expression by both the individual and society. And then once this is done, then it is considered a highly enlightened age. Now, the present age does not altogether come within this definition of being an enlightened age. Apologies for this construction noise, I'm sorry. Compared with past ages, ours is enlightened, but compared with the understanding to be gained in future ages, we see that the enlightenment of our time, of our times, is limited. Now, the meaning of the name Micah and what the name represents is that Micah means who is like Jehovah, and the name of Micah represents the individual consciousness of man awakening to the truth of being and realizing that his true nature is godlike. Now, there cannot be made a comparison between Christ consciousness and then the formal compliance with law or custom. The two are utterly unalike. Hence, no comparison is possible. No formal observation of law can take the place of being honest, can take the place of justice, kindness, humility, or any other Christ-like quality. Now, explain the terms, quote-unquote, wicked balances, deceitful weights, and scant measures that is described in Micah chapter 6, verses 9 to 16, which I'll just read from the Good News Translation. It is wise to fear the Lord. He calls to the city, listen, you people who assemble in the city. In the houses of evil people are treasures which they got dishonestly. They use false measures, a thing that I hate. How can I forgive those who use false scales and weights? Your rich people exploit the poor, and all of you are liars. So I have already begun your ruin and destruction because of your sins. You will eat but not be satisfied. In fact, you will still be hungry. You will carry things off, but you will not be able to save them. Okay. And anything you do save, I will destroy in a war. You will sow grain, but not harvest the crop. You will press oil from olives, but never get to use it. You will make wine, but never drink it. This will happen because you have followed the evil practices of King Omri and of his son, King Ahab. You have continued their policies, and so I will bring you to ruin, and everyone will despise you. People everywhere will choose you. Now, what this can be explained as, that these are all tokens of injustice, unkindness, pride, arrogance, none of which have any place or part in the Christ consciousness. So and then the expression the city refers to Jerusalem, which represents the heart of man. The heart requires spiritual expression, but the power to achieve this must not be suppressed by the evils that man allows himself to enmesh himself in. So I think that's all for now. Now, Micah is, the message does contain clear signs of hope, though, after, the areas of judgment. About the the error thoughts and behaviors. So thank you.
All right, Reverend Mary Lou, I want to continue with chapter 6. There are some other questions that come up with the text. When we look at verse 9, verse 9, the Lord's voice cries to the city, wisdom shall see your name. Hear the rod, who has appointed it? It's asked, what does the rod signify? Well, the rod is the symbol of the blows, the stripes, as the text says, that man brings upon himself when he knowingly or unknowingly goes counter to divine law. And so here we are. It is said here that the reasons that we are suffering, the reasons that we have so many blows and stripes, is because we have knowingly or unknowingly gone counter to the divine law. And so we must then, how does one find out what the divine law is? We find out through study, prayer, and meditation. And so our spiritual practice is extremely important. God wills, Holy Spirit, that Christ consciousness within us will give us those answers that we need. Another question that is asked in the Fillmore website is, what is one of the names of Jehovah found in the Old Testament? In the Old Testament, Jehovah is often called the law. And I'm sure that we have in some of our Bible, especially some of our sermons and some of our readings and studies, we have seen the word law substituted for Lord. And in verses 6 through 8 chapter 6, where does one truly meet God? One meets God in the purposes and intentions of one's own heart, rather than in outer observances of ceremonies. So many of us decide that we're going to we go to church every Sunday, we tithe our money, we go to the different organizations and rituals and rites, keep the holidays, etc. But the real meaning of spirituality, of our relationship with God, comes from our heart. It is inside. And there is, of course, that there are some unconditional requirements made of man if he is to do good or to be godlike. We cannot be godlike and good and live that wonderful life unless we have a heartfelt relationship with God. So to prove himself godlike or a son of the highest, man must be just and kind toward his fellow man and himself, as well as humbly obedient to God. This means that he must look to the higher wisdom for guidance at all times, rather than lean on his own understanding. And so, I think that is something that is that's not strange, but it's something that we have to have intention and we have to have will to do. So, until that time, when we are totally under the reign of God, what can we expect? Jehovah's controversy that started the court case that started the chapter, or the manifestation of the law of cause and effect through negative channels, will result in wars, calamities, and tribulations. So it is kind of like almost very, very important that we begin personally, individually, to determine that we are going to follow God's law, we are going to be under the law, we are going to allow the Christ consciousness to have full sway in our minds, bodies, and affairs. It's important that we do that because, as it said, the song says, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me. So we are the ones who we have to use a cliche, we have to be the change we want to make. And so looking around us at our world today, we really must do it. We truly must if we want to live a lovely and wonderful life that God has made available to us. So is the observance of common rites and accepted rituals of any benefit to a person in the development of a sense of true values? Yes. When spiritually understood, rites and ceremonies in themselves do not touch the realm of spiritual principles, but when understood and observed spiritually, they add depth to the individual life. So no one is saying that we should just abandon our churches and our principles and our rituals and our holy days, etc. No, but we have to understand them. which means that we really have to understand them personally and take what is said personally. Can a person's character be transformed merely through his going or using the possessions for his possessions for religious purposes or for the purposes of social benefit? Interestingly enough, so many of us do contribute our money and our time for socially beneficial activities, and we give money and contributions to religious causes. But this does not transform our character. No, it doesn't, unless his giving or use of his possessions is motivated by a spirit of justice, love, and humility. The character of a person remains under the domination of self-interest. And it's very easy to give money and time, or give money in particular, because it's tax deductible. And so many people who are so-called philanthropists are not necessarily giving because they are feeling motivated by justice, love, or humility to give, but because of the tax deduction. And so we have to look at that and see if that applies to any of us. And the last question, what are the requirements we must meet to live a truly upright life? The requirements are few but strict. What doth Jehovah require of thee but to do justly, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with thy God? That is what we are supposed to do. And that is a personal thing. It takes personal. You have to look within, see what your motives are, see what you're thinking, and therefore see if you personally are doing this. And if you are, then you will have happiness, love, peace, joy, abundance, and every single thing you want, because you know that you are living, a living proof of what God has asked, that I truly can say, I do justly, I love mercy, and I walk humbly with my God. That would be a beautiful, beautiful day. Okay, so here we go now. That's chapter 6. We move to chapter 7. And chapter 7 is in the Unity website, they only have one question. So I just want to very briefly talk about what is in chapter 7. And chapter 7 consists of three main sections, telling you of Israel's confession and comfort, God's people's humble, and then it's what follows is God's people's humble confession of sin, and third, God's compassion on Israel. In the first section, the prophet Micah confesses the sin of God's people and describes the specific sins and general characteristics. He recognizes that their sin has left them impoverished and reveals their deeply ingrained sin against others. In the second section of verses 1 through 4, in the second section, he speaks about personal relationships that have crumbled among God's people. And he says that actually you cannot look to relatives for help. You can only look to the Lord for help. In the third section of chapter 7, Micah speaks of God's compassion on Israel despite their sin. And 11 to 13 tells us about God's comfort and pardon to his people. Micah speaks of the restored city of the people of God. When the call comes for Israel's restoration, God will send a call out not only for Israel, and the Hebrews to come together, but also other nations, Because when God gathers Israel for restoration, they will come to a desolate land, ruined because of the judgment of God on the people. But the people around, the nations around, will see their restoration, their growth, and their thriving, and they will come to join them. Israel restored to the land and enjoying a restored relationship with the Lord. The people or the nations that opposed Israel will see how wrong they were to fight against them, and they will respect the Lord and as they did not do before, and they will see the power and love of God in action. And so you will have a joining of not just Israel, but also the people who were outside of Israel, the nations outside, because as we know, when the Messiah reigns, the Messiah does not just reign over Israel. The Messiah reigns over the entire world, and so therefore people will be drawn to join in to the restoration that Israel has enjoyed, and they too will be involved with under the leadership of God. So, what does this mean to us? It means that when our spiritual development is realized, when the Christ consciousness is, we are totally under the Christ consciousness, all of our faculties will also come under the Christ consciousness. So it won't be that we will be spiritual in certain ways and not spiritual in others. It means that all of us, all of that which we think, all of that which we are, will be under the reign of the Christ consciousness. In Truth Unity website, there's only one question that is asked under Chapter 7, and it's this. What conviction brings peace of mind to the individual, irrespective of whether the external realm is at peace or not? I like this question because it says to me, personally, that even though there's all kinds of stuff going on in the world, can I have peace of mind? Can I enjoy the wonderful life that God has ordained for me? And the answer is this: the thought of the loving kindness of God, of divine compassion or forgiveness without limit, and the truth yet to be realized, understood, and expressed by the individual ruled by the Christ consciousness, the I Am consciousness. I have that. If we have that, the thought of the loving kindness of God, of divine, the thought of divine compassion, the thought of forgiveness without limit, and the thoughts of truth yet to be realized and understood and expressed by us under the Christ consciousness, which is the I Am. If we are under that consciousness, that I Am consciousness, the Christ consciousness, totally we will have peace, even though all kinds of stuff is breaking loose here. And that ends Micah for us. It's very, very, very beautiful because even though we are New Thought Christians and we do our spiritual practice and we are in the regeneration process and we are doing this actively and we're doing it with intention and devotion, there is still that outside world, which can be really, really something else. And so we know that, yes, we can live that life that God has ordained for us. We can have that peace that passeth all understanding. We can have the love and the joy and the abundance and the safety that we need when that Christ consciousness is in control. So Micah ends with that, and good ending, I think. Good ending, because I've been wondering about that myself, you know, this crazy world we're living in. Can I really have the kind of life that God has ordained for me here? Yes, I can. Under the Christ consciousness, the mighty I am presence. And if I'm operating under that totally, I'm okay. I'll be more than okay. And so will you. And so it is. That's the end of Micah. I have enjoyed reading Micah very much the last part in particular, because it is totally metaphysical. As we know that the mountains and the hills is a higher consciousness. It's only within. We have to go within to get into that. And so we know that all of the things that are spoken about in Micah 6 and 7 have to do with us personally. And so it is. It's good. It's good. It's good. Okay. And so, therefore, if you have something to add or something you'd like to comment on, feel free.
I could say in the Science of Mind, in the booklet, the reading for today,
mm-hmm.
it talks about to walk with great love and great faith.
Mm-hmm.
And reading to have faith is to trust yourself to the water. When you swim, you don't grab hold of the water, because if you do, you will sink and drown. Instead, you relax and float. And then Ernest Holmes says, and that peace which comes from the innermost recesses of the spirit is left with us, a peace that the world cannot take away. So no one walks so safely as one who walks humbly and harmlessly with great love and great faith. And the affirmation, I embody peace and live my life in the way of peace.
Okay, fine. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
I embody peace and live my life in the way of peace. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, I just wanted to say, too, that in concluding his prophecy, Micah saw God's future work as a continuation of his past work to the fathers of Israel. Micah knew that same love, compassion, and mercy he showed to their fathers was available to them today if they received it in faith. So, and that is true of us, too. That God will care for us as he did the people that we've read about and people in, who were could be considered fathers of us today. So Micah knew the same love, compassion, and mercy he showed to their fathers was available to them today if they received it in faith. And so chapter 7 looks at the demoralized state of society in Judah, which had called down the vengeance of God, or as we know that the vengeance is the law of cause and effect. So the negative effects had been called down. The prophet calls on the Lord as his only source of salvation, mercy, pointing the people toward an everlasting hope in their everlasting God. And so it calls believers to be governed by God, the Christ consciousness, and walk in spirit and in truth. And as you said, to embody peace and love and live my life in the way of peace. And so that is what it is. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. And so we want to see if Elva, are you here today? Elva? Okay, I guess she is not. And Imani Parker, are you here? I know Judith is at a workshop. She's out of town. Okay, so then that is it for us. Go ahead, Mary Lou. What are you going to say?
No. I wasn't going to say anything, but yeah, no. Because like last week we talked about peace,
mm-hmm.
and so this is like a continuation of being the peace we wish to see in the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it must begin with us.
Yes, in our thoughts, in our behaviors. Yeah.
All right. And so, what we embody what we're thinking, so that our thoughts and our thought processes outpicture in the world. So if we want peace to outpicture in our world and in the world, then we must be peaceful. We must embody peace.
Mm-hmm. I just got a text from Reverend Judith. She says she's talking, but we can't hear her.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry we can't, because I know she's at a conference.
A conference. Yeah.
Sorry we can't hear her, but she said she was going to listen if she could, but
yeah.
I didn't know that she could or not, you know, so anyway.
Let me see if she wrote. Oh, wait.
Mm-hmm. All right, so then next week we will continue, we will continue with the prophets, and we will do the prophet Nahum, I hope that everybody who plans to be with us in the month of December will be able to get the Unity booklets. Go ahead, Meredith.
Reverend, now, Judith said it's the station. It's not her. They have to unmute her if they can.
Oh, okay. Well, we're on beyond another 6 minutes. So if we get her, that'll be fine, you know. And if we don't,
yeah,
that'll be too bad. But anyway, she's trying. I'd love to hear what she has to say.
Yeah,
this conference, you know, but I'm glad that she is speaking. So anyway, we did get through Micah, and I want to do two, maybe next week, briefly, the meaning of each one of these minor prophets. As we said before, several weeks ago, that they're not called minor because of their messages. They're called minor because they're shorter than Isaiah, Jeremiah, Daniel, therefore they call them minor, but they really are not minor, you know, because what they have to say is very, very important, very, very important. It's important to us, important.
Yes. Yeah, they all are. And they basically say what Micah says, too, that to love justice, live in constant love, and walk humbly with God. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If we do that, we can't go wrong. We cannot go wrong. We cannot go wrong. Are you familiar with...
Elvis says she's trying to talk, too.
Oh, okay. She can't get in?
Hey, you are not hearing me either. So Elva and Reverend Judith are trying to say something. But for some reason, yeah, they're not able to unmute. Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So we're having technical difficulties now.
Yeah.
Oh, my. I don't know. Well, I know that Dr. Winborn is not on today. It's Dr. Robinson. So I don't know what's what, but Winborn is not doing it today. And I had hoped that, I wish I knew, why that is, that they are not able to get on, you know?
They said they can hear clearly. They can hear us. It's just that they can't speak. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And I can't get Winborn. Winborn is not at home. He's not in the studio. It's Dr. Robinson in the studio. So I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do.
Oh.
I don't know what to do.
Okay.
Anyway.
Ivan says we are on mute. That they are.
I don't know what to do. I don't have a... Okay, let me see if I could get. I don't know what to do. What do you suggest? I don't know what to do. I don't have Robinson's phone number, personal number. I do have. I have the call in for the station. I don't have anything else that I could do.
I don't know what we could do.
I don't know.
Well, maybe hopefully by next week we'll be able to do it.
Oh, we will definitely work on this next week.
Yeah.
Yes, we will.
Yeah.
Yes, we will. My goodness. I will be on there with him today or tomorrow. Well, see, Winborn is the man that I work with, right? He's not here today, so I don't know Robinson's number. I don't know how to get in touch with him, but I will from now on. I will.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness sake.
Oh, right.
Well, technical difficulties.
Elba.
Yeah, technical difficulties. What can I say? You know, it happens. Well, in any case, I love the end of Micah. It says at the end, chapter 7, he does not retain his anger forever because he delights in mercy. He will again have compassion on us and will subdue our iniquities. You, O God, will cast all our sins into the depths of the sea. You will give truth to Jacob and mercy to Abraham, which you have sworn to our fathers from days of old. And so that's what the Lord will do. That's what the Lord will do for us too. And, of course, we are waiting for that time when the Lord will do that for us. And it will be soon. It will be soon. But we have to make our move and decide that our Christ consciousness will actually rule our thought patterns and thought life. And then all will be well, you know. All will be well. So we're coming to the end of the Old Testament. And we are truly making room for this Christ consciousness, which will come in the personage of Jesus the Christ in Bethlehem and so forth. And so I know that Elva wanted to say something about Bethlehem, and we'll wait till next week and let her speak on that, because that's where Jesus is born. And so... we will talk
about
that.
And becomes
Of Advent,
too.
Yes. Advent is coming, and we'll be working with Advent. And I hope everybody gets the booklet from Unity that we'll be using as a focus of our programs, you know. And I am so sorry about this technical thing, you know. Okay. Well, we'll do without.
Elvis said she could hear very clearly, but she's not able to unmute.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, let us say our prayer of protection, because I have 201, and I'm going to end the program. The light of God surrounds
us.
The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is, and all is well. Go in peace and walk with the Master.
And we walk with the Master.
All right. So until next Saturday at 1, God bless, God bless, God bless. Take care and take care. See you next week.
Take care. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon.
Blessings.